Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Welcome to the Blackhawks Talk Podcast. I am Pat Boyle, joined this week by Charlie Romeliotis and Scott King, with Joel Quenneville returning to Chicago for the first time since his dismissal. This podcast is all about Q. Charlie Romeliotis went to Detroit, spoke with Quenneville this past weekend. We discussed about the surprise of being let go early last season. Would he have done anything differently with the Blackhawks at the tail end? His relationship with Dale Tallon. And he reflects on the 2010 Stanley Cup team. That and a whole bunch more as we break down Joel Quenneville in his return to Chicago on the latest Blackhawks Talk podcast.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
So with Joel Quenneville returning to the United Center for the first time since his dismissal last season, this is all about Joel. We're reflecting about his time here in Chicago, the 10 years he spent behind the Blackhawks bench, of course, the 2010 championship team. Charlie, you spent time with him this past weekend, and we'll get to that interview in just a bit. Let's just start with overall covering Joel, what you thought of him as a coach, and his legacy here in Chicago.
Yeah, I think he was the perfect head coach to oversee a very well-oiled machine. And I think he's the ultimate player's coach. And we saw it when he got brought in early in that 2008-09 season, where the second he comes, he already has a presence to him and the guys are responding to him. But it's so hard, and we're seeing it in today's NHL, how many coaching changes there are. It's so hard to have the attention of a locker room for that long. And Joel had it for 10 plus years here in Chicago. So the guys respected him. He was such a well-respected coach around the league and a guy that doesn't lose the locker room very easily. So I think the guys were also very appreciative. And he's also pays it forward to the players also. They didn't practice a lot. Morning skates were very short, but they were high intensity. So Joel, I think, was the perfect guy to oversee that last decade of the Blackhawks in three Stanley Cups.
Yeah, for me, media-wise, covering them, that was always one of the most fun parts of the job for me, was being involved with covering Q. You had to decipher his Q speak. So, you know, when he said a guy could play, you always knew he was going to play. These terms he used always had a specific meaning, and they always worked out that way. Whereas today, by comparison, if Carlton said a guy could play, you're like, oh, maybe, like, he might play. I don't know. So it's interesting that that's different. And yeah, he's just a guy's guy, like a man's man, like an old school coach, you know, the big guy with the stash. But also there's this lighter side to him that would come out sometimes, like in a scrum, if you could ask a question, you got him to smile. It's like finding a unicorn or a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. If you got a cue smile or even better, a cue laugh. And he did those things sparingly, but just a great guy to interact with. I think he always understood that the media had a job, and maybe he felt it was his duty as a coach to help fulfill that. He was never like a torts guy, despite being tough and from the old school that would storm off if he didn't like a question. You know, he would always help you out with a good response. The times he did storm off, I just remember a couple. It was usually because he was mad at the officials for a dirty hit or something. So, just a great guy to cover, a fantastic coach, obviously. And I anticipate the reception he's going to get is going to be just like what Kane got for his 1,000th point. I think it's that meaningful to the fans, and things are going good right now. I think people are pretty happy.
Along the lines of what you guys said, the blend of old school, but the relatability to the current player. And you know, when he got here in 2009, it was a young team, relatively young team.
So, you know, I think they respected the fact that he had played in the league, that he came in with a ton of cachet. Being the second all-time winningest coach speaks for itself. He would not call out players directly, like you mentioned, Scott. He had his own lingo, as you said. If you heard ordinary, that wasn't a good game. I think he, you know, he had definitely had a doghouse. And sometimes he was quick to put players in it. And sometimes those players never got out of it. And if there was one criticism, I would say maybe a little quick sometimes to put and label a player this and put him in the doghouse. But more times than not, he was right. And I love the accountability factor. Ice time was his currency. He knew that. If he would have seen Drake Caggiula take four consecutive penalties like he did earlier this week. Well, let me just put it this way. Drake would not have been on the ice for the opportunity to have the fourth penalty. You know, he was fiery when he needed to be. I can remember some gestures that went viral, certainly. But he was also had restraint. And one game in particular, Game 7 against Detroit,
yep.
When Hjalmarsson scores that goal a little over a minute to go, and it's taken off the board, most coaches, in my opinion, would have gone absolutely bananas and thought that it was the worst call they'd ever seen, which it would have been, and you cost my team an opportunity to advance in the Stanley Cup playoffs. But if you remember, he was very measured in his response because I don't think he wanted his team to think that that was the game right there. We just had the game taken away from us. So he was fiery when needed to be, but was also smart and showed restraint and didn't panic. And I thought that was a good example of that. Then when it comes to in-game coaching.
Oh, there's nobody better.
No. And I think we saw that Game 7 against Anaheim. I think we saw it against Vancouver, you know, moving Byfuglien to forward. You know, he had the ability to be a tactician in game. And I mean, even when he didn't have last change, like in Game 7 against Anaheim, he completely won that game with some of the moves he made. And I always remember too that horse racing aspect to it, which was also kind of comical as well. Because the Stanley Cup playoffs are always going on when, you know, Triple Crown races are, and we all know he dabbles in the ponies, and there'd be times where within minutes of a win or a loss for the Blackhawks in the playoffs, he had a horse that was running in a particular race, and he had his eye on that as well. So there was that levity that he brought to the equation. So there's so many great things. It's going to be a great night. I'm really looking forward to it. It's well-deserved. And, you know, he's an icon. And, you know, a 10-year run for a coach, as we just saw with Joe Maddon, you know, if you can end a 108-year World Series drought and only last 5 years, a 10-year run is pretty damn impressive.
Yeah, there isn't a coach that loves winning more than Joel Quenneville, and he'll be the first to say that also. And I think that kind of competitiveness and attitude really rubbed off on the guys. Like, that was a very competitive group. Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews, Patrick Sharp, Hossa, you can go on and on. Those guys were a galvanizing group. But when they saw their head coach, or when they see their head coach standing up on the bench screaming, there are seven guys on the ice for too many men on the ice, but like, he's so passionate. I think it's just so contagious throughout the locker room. And like I said earlier, the perfect head coach to oversee that dynasty of the Blackhawks.
Yeah, and no disrespect to Jeremy Colleton. I think things are going really well right now because, like Robin Leonard said on Sunday, that the players are buying into the system now, and you're seeing them win and beat some good teams. But that day last November when Q got fired, just the regularly scheduled practice, there was a reason it felt like you're at a funeral, and that's the media felt the same way the fans did because we liked interacting with him. You knew what he meant to Chicago and Chicago sports, and being in that room with the players, like, you know, those guys, they gave us quotes and they talked, but they didn't really know what to say. It really caught them off guard. So I for me, that day, like, really speaks to what he meant to Chicago.
And you think about it, over the decade that he was here, there weren't any real salacious scandals or anything that came out of the locker room. And you look at other coaches in this town and all the backlash and some of the way they're treated by fans and, you know, alike, sports radio, you know, Q, and maybe it's because hockey is, let's be honest, the fourth talked about sport in town. That might have something to do with it. But I thought it was also his ability to keep things in-house and, you know, handle things directly with players, not making it a public situation. And, you know, like you said, Charlie, it was the perfect marriage between these two. So you spoke with him in Detroit on Saturday.
Yeah, I did. And it was a fun interview. It was good to catch up with Joel, and I told him right off the bat that it's good to have him back in the game because hockey is always better when Joel Quenneville is in it. And we covered a lot of ground. We covered the, you know, his transition now to Florida, and we rehashed a little bit of what happened in Chicago, whether he was surprised at the timing of the firing and the whole head coach GM relationship with Stan Bowman and the importance of it. And also we got into a little bit of the 2010 anniversary, which I don't think any of us can believe it's already been 10 years. So let's throw it off right now, starting off with his new transition in Florida.
It's been fun. It's been a good process here. I think as we've gone along this year, it's a whole different conference, a whole different division, different type of lifestyle. You know, we've got beautiful weather. You got, you go on the road trip, you come back at 2 in the morning after being in the ice and in the snow, and all of a sudden you get off the plane at 75 degrees. So that's different, and, you know, there's some perks to it, and there's some things that you can enjoy. And we got a team that's, we think that we're in that learning process of going to that next level. We've had an interesting start to the season, which I thought was a good start. We've had an ordinary stretch here, and we know that we want to go into the break here on a positive note. But we're in a tough division. We think that we're doing everything we can. We want to be a playoff team in the worst way. We've got a lot of young guys that are learning, and they're having some guys are having some really big years as well. So we've got a lot of pieces here with our team here. We think we're turning into a four-line team. We got a defense that, you know, is maturing and improving. I think offensively we think it's very comparable to when we were at Chicago. We always never had to worry about scoring goals. We can score goals. It's now we got to defend in all zones. But it's we've been getting some progress here, and it's been a fun team to work with.
You mentioned that at your press conference that there are a lot of similarities between the Blackhawks and the Panthers of now that they're rising. What sorts of things do you see parallels?
Well, high-end players. I mean, very privileged to have the opportunity. You know, you get a Caner and a Taser and a Dunks when you're starting there. And so we had some really good players. Hossa, you know, we had some top players. Now you come here, you got Barkov, you got Huberto. Ekblad's a nice player. You know, we've got some guys that might be in that next level, but a lot of guys are having some good years offensively. So it's I think by committee, it's a lot of guys can score goals on our team there, and then finding that balance where we got, you know, it's not just a scoring line where everybody got a purpose to it is what we're trying to get at. So there's depth on our team, and we're trying to make sure that playing well without the puck is going to be one of our strengths. And going back to that team, it was a four-line team, but we really did have some high-end players, and the high-end players really responded at the very memorable times.
So you're obviously returning to Chicago for the first time on Tuesday, but it's weird because it's happening so late into the season. We're at the midway, past the midway mark already. What will your emotions be like going back?
Going into it right now, thinking about it, I think it's going to be a fun night. The memories are so great, the moments, the people, the staff, the organization. You know, we got treated like you couldn't ask for a better 10 years of our lives, or our coaching experience, or our families, or the opportunity to work with some of the best players that ever played the game. So there's a lot of good things, and so looking forward to it. Hey, the fans have been tremendous. We love Chicago. We loved everything about it. And, I'm sure that I'm looking forward to it.
When you got let go, you kind of faded from the spotlight, and fans never got a chance to thank you for everything. What do you expect the fan support to be on that night?
Yeah, I never got to thank them much either, though. But you know, certainly, it's a great appreciation for what they meant and what they how important they were for our team as well. Support in Chicago was outstanding, and you know, I just think that it's a special place to play. And we had a one of those memorable runs. That privilege to be there. You know, we got the franchise was the team of the decade, and you know, it was very deserving. And being a part of it, because everybody's contribution was important, and that was part of it as well.
Were you surprised by the timing of when you were let go? Obviously, you were there for 10 plus years, and so you accomplished a lot. But it seemed like it was a, you know, it was only 1 month into the season. What was your reaction when you found that
out? At the time, surprised or not, maybe not. But after what's going on this year, I'm going to say not surprised at all. So it's a... you know, I think in our business, it happens. You know, we're seeing a number of coaches... you know, lose their jobs, and it's like, and then you see what happened in St. Louis, and all of a sudden, you know, you had a team that was in the toughest spot in the league, and they turned out to be a champion. So it's a, you know, I think that could be how things going now, maybe moving forward. But it was a, hey, it happens. And especially in our business, knowing that's one of the negative things that can happen in our game. And so, but we took some time away, and yeah, and we're happy where we're at now.
I know hindsight is 20/20, but is there anything that you would have done differently when you take a step back and reflect on it? Or
coaching-wise,
yeah.
You know, I think you do everything you can best to do everything you can to win. And, you know, we had a tough year, I think, the year before. That start to the season, we had, you know, had a decent start. The Calgary game, that was the last game. You know, I can look back and say, I wish I could have done this, I could have done that. Yeah, kind of like what we do after every game here. I mean, we're always looking as me or our staff looking at things that I should have done differently, whether who we had on the ice at a certain time. I'm sitting there, yeah, I could have done this. So we reflect like that, you know, and I think that second guessing ourselves is something that you can learn over the course of a season. But the gut and the spontaneousness of coaching is what we enjoy, and sometimes that you can always second guess yourself on that type of stuff.
A lot has been made about it in Chicago, whether it's been overblown or not, about coach GM relationship. What is the importance of that, and what's your relationship like here with Dale?
Dale's fine. We've been with Dale before. I think I think as long as you're well aware of what's going on with the team, where we're at, the game's different. There's a business side of it. There's a hockey side of it. Stan was, we had a good relationship. It was fine. I think we were respectful for each other's jobs and roles and how we did our things. And that's kind of the way it was, and it is. Dale's, I probably see Dale more, but, we always talk in hockey, and you're talking about this or that or that. And so that's just the way it is. And it's a, I'm respectful for the position and the jobs they're doing and what they've done.
When you look back at your 10 plus years, what do you remember most about your time in Chicago?
The obviously the championships were significant achievements, and then when you look back how each one was accomplished and how hard they were and all the things, the ups and the downs of winning each one were the things that stand out the most. And the thrills that we had at the games and the city. Celebrations were cool. I thought the parades were extremely cool. But the guys going through it with the guys was probably the part to be the most memorable.
So this is the 10-year anniversary of the 2010 Stanley Cup team for the Blackhawks. Can you believe it has been that long?
2010, it was almost like, okay, where's the puck now? Do we know where the puck is? Okay, I can't believe it's already 10 years.
At what point in the season?
When is it?
What, the anniversary?
Yeah, is there going to be?
They're celebrating. Okay, I think they're doing something big in March.
Okay.
But
okay,
at what point in the season did you feel like, okay, this is a special group that we can go all the way?
Well, the year before, we got a good education by when we played Detroit. Getting the conference finals was pretty impressive with that group, young group that a lot of talent, a lot of ability, competitive bunch. And so we learned, had some valuable lessons in that and that series, and then throughout those first couple of rounds. So it was that helped us, a young team learning how to win, and that exposure the following year. you know, you get that type of, you get that close, you're thinking of, you got a chance, a real chance. And I think the following year, you know, a lot of things got to go right, though. I mean, you need goaltending, you need health, you need, you know, you need your best players to be great, and you need four lines. And I thought, and you need your D to be solid. So we had a lot of those things happen, and fortunate in a lot of ways. Sometimes the matchups are work out in your favor, but some amazing series, some things that turned it around. And you know, you think about that Nashville game, you think about you know, game six against Philly. I mean, and then you can go on and on, but there's, you know, some series you kind of not as vivid as others, but it's a it was pretty amazing, each one, though. They stand out.
The Patrick Kane game five goal against Nashville, where does that rank among biggest goals in playoff history? And it's weird to think about the alternative, whether there is a game six and then a game seven in back in Chicago.
That was unbelievable. I mean, when I think back about it, it was a, you know, take a 5-minute major, down a goal late in the game, and you got Hosts in the box, you got, you know, now we're getting down late, and we got to use Kaner. Never killed, probably, I don't even know if we used him maybe once that whole year, killing. I don't even think we did. And, you know, he knows what he's out there to do, and then we got a break. And then we scored, and we still had to kill it. And then we got in overtime, and that was a huge goal. And the crowd, that might have been the loudest we heard the building in certain times. I mean, we've had some moments that stood out. The Vancouver game when Kaner might have had a hat trick that night might have been loud. Or you know, Seeb scoring against Detroit, that was loud. That was noticeable, memorable. You know, Dunk scoring against Tampa, certain goals stand out. And but that was definitely a huge, huge goal. Don't expect to score shorthanded like that very often.
How big of an impact did Marion Hossa have on the franchise? Because when he did leave, I mean, they really haven't been the same since.
One of those players that really, really set the table of playing the right way. And as a coach, you couldn't ask for a guy that demonstrates exactly what your message is of how we want to play structurally, all zones, in all situations, protects the puck, keeps the puck. Tough to take it away from him. So it was almost like, okay, this is like the perfect player, and does everything you want. So I think that playing without the puck is something that we always try to instill, and checking is a part of our game. And he was perfect in that area. So he was ideal for our team, and quietly went about his business. A good teammate, you know, one of those guys that guys would rely upon. And, you know, every game was he was key to what we were trying to do in our team game, and it was noticeable. But he used him in all situations, all times of the game. Very important player.
Dustin Byfuglien, I have to ask, what went into the decision to move him from defenseman to forward, and where does that rank among your coaching decisions?
I don't know if I get credit for that. I think a lot of guys might have tried it in different parts of their career, and even if he was playing D, you could put him in front of the net to be a distraction because he's a big guy and he can screen and he's tough to move and he's got good hands and he can still find pucks in tight areas. So it was almost like, hey, I know Buff would rather play D, but it's a lot of work when you're, you know, a lot more skating and getting to the front of the net. But as a defenseman, he is a handful in front of the net or for goalies. And so there was, you know, he brought that element, that versatility. You could use him in either situation in the course of the middle of a game. So I think he brought a unique aspect to our team. Fun guy to be around and coach, and, you know, privilege to coach with him as well. Wish him nothing but the best, and you still see him around. And, you know, hopefully we see him in the game soon. And the Buff, I mean, I remember the series with Vancouver and San Jose where he was very, very disruptive at the net.
Well, last one for you. Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews, Duncan Keith, you've coached against these guys. They're winners, three-time Stanley Cup champions. What's it going to be like now going against them when you come back to Chicago?
Great appreciation, respect for these guys as players, knowing that, you know, let's be aware. Let's try to deny Kaner the puck. Be aware of Johnny. He can do beat you a number of ways, you know, starting right off the puck drop. Dunks, you know, he's just going to be out there half the game or almost half the game, and he's going to be up in a play, and he's going to be killing plays, and he's going to be around the puck, and he's one of those guys that, you know, you got a lot of appreciation for what he brings your team.
Joel, thank you for this, and good luck the rest of the way.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So it was great you were able to catch up with Joel in Detroit, actually like a driver nine iron from his hometown in Windsor there. What was your biggest takeaway from your conversation with him, Charlie?
Yeah, it was. He was so laid back in the interview, and I was very. I'm glad he was laid back because he was so reflective of his time in Chicago, and he even talked about it a while back, like in his press conference, where you think back to 10 plus years in Chicago, and he has no bitterness towards the organization because they accomplished so much. But at the time, you know, maybe there was a little bit of resentment because he got such a quick hook. And I asked him whether he was surprised at the timing of it, and he said, at the time, no, but now we're seeing all of these head coaches lose their jobs. I think seven coaches have lost their jobs in the NHL, whereas zero happened midseason the previous year. So, or up until whatever January. So it was a good interview. I thought he was very reflective of his time in Chicago and respectful of the process, and doesn't hold any ill will towards Stan Bowman or the organization. He looks back at his memories in Chicago fondly, and I thought he was terrific in the interview.
He handled your interview kind of like he handled his entire time here in Chicago. He wasn't going to cause any huge waves with his responses when you asked the question if he had anything to do differently, and he mentioned the Calgary game, which was his last game, and it wasn't his finest hour as a coach, which he says. A coach is always scrutinizing what they did, what they didn't do. But that game in particular, not putting a player in the box.
Yeah.
And you could tell, because I was able to watch the video, like you could see that it still bothers him the way that went down. But
like reading the tea leaves, I don't think it bothered him that, like, man, if I did that, maybe I would still be.
No.
I think it bothered him just as his coach.
Sure.
He's like, man, that really irks me as a head coach.
Yes. Like the fact that he knew, exactly like what you, and, but like he wasn't going to say anything salacious there. He wasn't going to, in one way, pat Dale Talon on the back and it be a backhanded compliment towards Stan. He was diplomatic in his responses. And I think time heals all wounds. And if you'd done that interview or we had caught him in December of last year when he was just decompressing after being let go, you probably would have had a different guy. But, he's in a really good situation, and he gets it. He goes, as he always said, "I'm in the winning business. I'm in the winning business." And the first day you're hired is the next closest day to being let go. And he feels like he had a charmed 10-year run that produced three championships.
Yeah, you always heard him talk about the win business, and that kind of goes into one of my takeaways from Charlie's first question, talking about the group in Florida. And he said, I think we want to be in the playoff. We want to be a playoff team in the worst way. And that's why you hire Q. That's what you get from him. You guys were talking about player accountability with ice time and getting benched and just doing the right things day in and day out. He puts that mindset in the player's mind, the entire team, to where you guys are expected to win. You're expected to perform the right way on a shift-by-shift basis. So that stood out to me. Another thing, it's just crazy to think about him being there and coaching against, when he mentioned Keith and Taves and Kane. For Kane, he goes, "Let's try to deny Kane or the puck." Said Taves can beat you a number of ways, and Dunks can play half the game and jump into plays and will kill the play. It will kill plays. And the funny thing is, he's talking about them. He's going to coach against them, but he played a tremendous role in developing these guys' games and a huge reason why they're the future Hall of Famers they are.
And, he was very diplomatic in not taking too much credit for those championships. Like, he always referred to the talent that he had.
Yep.
And I thought it was also interesting when he talked, reminiscing about certain goals. And, look, they had a lot of success, so it's hard to remember. But he did point out the Nashville game and the shorty that Patrick Kane scored, and said it was the loudest he had ever heard the United Center. And there were, as we all know, a lot of loud, memorable games on the West Side.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so crazy how, and the one thing that stood out to me about that 2010 team is what Joel said is, And I think the most important part is he's like, we had a lot of high-end players, but all of those high-end players delivered in those big moments. And I think that's what you need to take your game to the next level. And I think that's what he's trying to accomplish in Florida. Like, they have all these young guys and Barkov and Huberto and Ekblad, and he wants them to perform at such a high level and also get, you know, have had the depth scoring is obviously crucial, but you look at all the teams that won the Stanley Cup and it just in recent years, best players are always shining. The Blackhawks got that on a consistent basis every single playoff run, and Joel, I'm sure, is very appreciative of having coached those players.
And as if Joel's return to the United Center wasn't going to be a big enough storyline, with Patrick Kane getting his 1,000th career point on Sunday, there will be a ceremony pregame. It'll be appropriate that Joel is in the house for that because he's been so instrumental in Patrick's career. It's made a homecoming, and it's taken it to another level. Tuesday night's going to be a really special night at the United Center.
It is. And look, if Taves can get 1 point for 800, that's not small fries either. Keith, it's been on his mind, I'm sure, for a while now to get one more goal for 100 in his career. Those milestones can happen right in front of Q, so that could make for a really special night. And I was going to add, too, when Charlie was asking about some of the things from 2010, Q wants to know where the puck is.
Yes.
He still wants to know what happened to it for Kane's goal there. So it's something still on his mind I thought was interesting.
I think the really cool part about Tuesday also is that the Blackhawks are on this really nice winning streak right now. They've won five in a row, and I think over the last month they've played by far their best hockey of the season. So it would have maybe had a different feeling Tuesday if, you know, the Blackhawks were still trying to battle through inconsistencies or whatever, but it seems like they're playing their best hockey right now. So there is meaning going into this game where the Blackhawks are in a good place. The Panthers are fighting for a playoff spot. It's going to be a competitive game. And Jeremy Colliton said it after his press conference on Sunday. Like, they're going to have to sit on this result for 10 days going into the break. So it's very important for them to make sure that they finish on a positive note.
And they just saw firsthand Saturday night a team that was already on vacation while they were on the ice in the Toronto Maple Leafs. I remember seeing stories on Saturday about where these guys were going to be playing Augusta National this week. And lo and behold, they went out there on Saturday night and played like they were already on vacation. So take a lesson from that. You also get a Florida team that's playing Monday night in Minnesota. So look, a lot of reminders to make the most of that opportunity, like you said, Charlie. Look, they're just a few points out of the final wildcard spot. I've never seen the Western Conference playoff picture as compacted as it is right now. Between the 3 seed and the 8 seed, 1 point separates those teams. It's crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. And I think the good news about Tuesday's game is that there is going to be some emotional moment because Joel is returning. Whereas you look at the last time the Blackhawks headed into the break and they got spanked by the New Jersey Devils 7-1, and maybe they were looking ahead at that 3-day break. Something tells me that they are not going to overlook this game on Tuesday night. So let's hope that they finish off on a positive note.
What kind of standing ovation? So you got to think one of the first or second timeouts in the first period, they'll have some sort of video tribute to Q. And then at that point, when it's over, I think there'll be the huge ovation. Is that the way you guys expect it to go down?
I think so. I think right in the beginning, when he's announced with the starters, there'll be a loud roaring cue that might last, you know, into the first period. I don't know. And in the video tribute, like, that's got to be longer than some of the ones we've seen for the players, probably, right?
I would think so.
Yeah, it's going to be really special. Like I said, you can compare it to a fantastic milestone like Kane's 1,000th point. It's going to be something.
So our thanks, Charlie, to you, Matt Buckman, who made the trek north of the border and to Detroit to do a yeoman's effort to get Joel Quenneville to sit down with us. Our thanks to Florida Panthers Media Relations for also making that happen. And thank you for listening to the latest edition of the Blackhawks Talk podcast. For Scott King, Charlie Romeliotis, I'm Pat Boyle. We'll catch you next time.